So we're continuing on the section acquiring skill, following on the theme of doing the gardening, sort of the terrain of the practice, ground. This next reading is from the Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta number 4, the Sutta on Fear and Dread. I'd say sort of how the Buddha worked through his own fears and difficulties. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anatta Pindika's Park. Then the Brahman, Janusoni, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said, Master Gotama, when clansmen have gone forth from the home life into homelessness out of faith in Master Gotama, do they have Master Gotama for their leader, their helper, and their guide? And do these people follow the example of Master Gotama? That is so, Brahman, that is so. When clansmen have gone forth from the home life into homelessness out of faith in me, they have me for their leader, their helper, and their guide, and these people follow my example. But, Master Gotama, remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest are hard to endure, seclusion is hard to practice, and it is hard to enjoy solitude. One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. That is so, Brahman, that is so. Remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest are hard to endure, seclusion is hard to practice, and it is hard to enjoy solitude. One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. Before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I too considered thus. Remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest are hard to endure. The jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. I considered thus. Whenever recluses or Brahmins unpurified in bodily conduct resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, then owing to the defect of their unpurified bodily conduct, these good recluses and Brahmins evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, unpurified in bodily conduct. I am purified in bodily conduct. I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with bodily conduct purified. Seeing in myself this purity of bodily conduct, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins unpurified in verbal conduct, unpurified in mental conduct, unpurified in livelihood resort, unpurified in livelihood, resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. They evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I am purified in verbal conduct. I am purified in mental conduct. I am purified in livelihood. I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with livelihood purified. Seeing in myself this purity of livelihood, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins who are covetous and full of lust, and similar through that whole series of, owing to that, they would experience, would evoke unwholesome fear and dread. And he says, but I am uncovetous. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins who are with a mind of ill will and intentions of hate, but I have a mind of loving kindness. Therefore I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins who are overcome by sloth and torpor, but I am without sloth and torpor, seeing in myself this I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins who are overcome with restless and unpeaceful in mind, But I have a peaceful mind. I consider thus. Whenever recluses or Brahmins were uncertain and doubting, but I have gone beyond doubt. Therefore I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus. Whenever recluses or Brahmins were given to self-praise and disparagement of others. But I am not given to self-praise and disparagement of others. So I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus. Whenever recluses or Brahmins were subject to alarm and terror. But I am free from trepidation. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins were desirous of gain, honor, and renown. But I have few wishes. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins were lazy and wanting in energy. But I am energetic. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins were unmindful and not fully aware. But I am established in mindfulness. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins were unconcentrated and with straying minds. But I am possessed of concentration. I consider thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins devoid of wisdom, drivelers, resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, then owing to the defect of their being devoid of wisdom and drivelers, these good recluses and Brahmins evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, devoid of wisdom, a driveler. I am possessed of wisdom. I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones, possessed of wisdom. Seeing in myself this possession of wisdom, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus. There are the specially auspicious nights of the 14th, 15th, and the 8th of the fortnight. Now what if on such nights as these I were to dwell in such awe-inspiring, horrifying abodes as orchard shrines, woodland shrines, and tree shrines? Perhaps I might encounter that fear and dread. And later, on such specially auspicious nights as the 14th, the 15th, and the 8th of the fortnight, I dwelt in such awe-inspiring, horrifying abodes as orchard shrines, woodland shrines, and tree shrines. And while I dwelt there, a wild animal would come up to me, or a peacock would knock off a branch, or the wind would rustle the leaves. I thought, what now if this is the fear and dread coming? I thought, why do I dwell always expecting fear and dread? What if I subdue that fear and dread while keeping the same posture that I am in when it comes upon me? While I walked, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither stood nor sat nor lay down till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I stood, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked nor sat nor lie down till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I sat, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked nor stood nor lay down till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I lay down, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked nor stood nor sat down till I had subdued that fear and dread. There are Brahmins, some recluses and Brahmins who perceive day when it is night and night when it is day. I say that on their part this is an abiding in delusion. But I perceive night when it is night and day when it is day. Rightly speaking, were it to be said of anyone, a being not subject to delusion has appeared in the world for the welfare and happiness of many. Out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of gods and humans, it is of me indeed that, rightly speaking, this should be said. Tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was tranquil and untroubled, my mind concentrated and unified. Then from this point, it goes into a description, a classical description of the four jhanas, and the three knowledges. So that, and then finishing with the seeing the taints. These are the taints. This is the origin of the taints. I directly knew as it actually is. This is the cessation of the taints. I directly knew as it actually is. This is the way leading to the cessation of the taints. When I knew and saw thus, my mind was liberated from the taint of sensual pleasure, from the taint of being, and from the taint of ignorance. When it was liberated, there came the knowledge. It is liberated. I directly knew. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. This was the third true knowledge attained by me in the third watch of the night. Ignorance was banished, and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished, and light arose, as happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. Now, Brahman, it might be that you think, perhaps the recluse Gotama is not free from lust, hate, and delusion, even today, which is why he still resorts to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. But you should not think thus. It is because I see two benefits that I still resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. I see a pleasant abiding for myself here and now, and I have compassion for future generations. Indeed, it is because Master Gotama is an accomplished one, a fully enlightened one, that he has compassion for future generations. Magnificent Master Gotama, magnificent Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to Master Gotama for refuge, and to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha Bhikkhus. From today, let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life. Okay, the next sutta is Machima 128. And this is actually Upakilesa Sutta, sort of a whole sutta on imperfections. In reality, I mean, it's sort of the imperfect, the thing on upikilesas comes up toward the end, but my sort of reading of it is that the whole sutta starts from the very beginning of how the different imperfections that arise in the mind and how to work with them from the sort of the imperfections or kilesas, upikilesas that manifest in conflict and then externally, and then going into the more refined aspects of practice and living together harmoniously, and then into the more refined imperfections which hinder concentration and insight. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Kosambi in Gosita's park. Now, on that occasion, the bhikkhus at Kosambi had taken to quarreling and brawling and were deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers. Then a certain bhikkhu went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he stood at one side and said, Venerable Sir, the bhikkhus here at Kosambi have taken to quarreling and brawling and are deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers. It would be good, Venerable Sir, if the Blessed One would go to those bhikkhus out of compassion. The Blessed One consented in silence. Then the Blessed One went to those bhikkhus and said to them, Enough, bhikkhus. Let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or dispute. When this was said, a certain bhikkhu said to the Blessed One, Wait, Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One, the Lord of the Dhamma, live at ease, devoted to a pleasant abiding here and now. We are the ones who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling, and dispute. For a second time, for a third time, the Blessed One said, Enough, bhikkhus, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or dispute. For a third time, that bhikkhu said to the Blessed One, Wait, Venerable Sir, We are the ones who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling, and dispute. Then, when it was morning, the Blessed One dressed, and taking his bowl and outer robe, entered Kosambi for alms. When he had wandered for alms in Kosambi and had returned from his alms round, after his meal he set his resting place in order, took his bowl and outer robe, and while standing uttered these stanzas. When many voices shout at once, none considers himself a fool. Though the Sangha is being split, none thinks himself to be at fault. They have forgotten thoughtful speech. They talk obsessed by words alone. Uncurbed their mouths, they bawl at will. None knows what leads him so to act. He abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who harbor thoughts like these, hatred will never be allayed. For in this world, hatred is never allayed by further acts of hate. It is allayed by non-hatred. This is the fixed and ageless law. Those others do not recognize that here we should restrain ourselves. But those wise ones who realize this at once end all their enmity. Breakers of bones and murderers, those who steal cattle, horses, wealth, those who pillage the entire realm, when even these can act together, why can you not do so too? If one can find a worthy friend, a virtuous, steadfast companion, then overcome all threats of danger and walk with him content and mindful. But if one finds no worthy friend, no virtuous, steadfast companion, then as a king leaves his conquered realm, walk like a tusker in the woods alone. Better it is to walk alone. There is no companionship with fools. Walk alone and do no evil, at ease like a tusker in the woods. Then, having uttered these stanzas while standing, the Blessed One went to the village, Balakalonakara. On that occasion, the Venerable Bhaggu was living at the village of Balakalonakara. When the Venerable Bhaggu saw the Blessed One coming in the distance, he prepared a seat and set out water for washing the feet. The Blessed One sat down on the seat made ready and washed his feet. The Venerable Bhaggu paid homage to the Blessed One and sat down at one side, and the Blessed One said to him, I hope you are keeping well, Bhikkhu. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. I am keeping well, Blessed One. I am comfortable, and I am not having any trouble getting alms food. Then the Blessed One instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged the Venerable Bhaggu with talk on the Dhamma, after which he rose from his seat and went to the eastern bamboo park. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Anuruddha, the Venerable Nandiya, and the Venerable Kimbila were living at the eastern bamboo park. The park keeper saw the Blessed One coming in the distance and told him, Do not enter this park, recluse. There are three clansmen here seeking their own good. Do not disturb them. The Venerable Anuruddha heard the park keeper speaking to the Blessed One and told him, Friend park keeper, do not keep the Blessed One out. It is our teacher, the Blessed One, who has come. Then the Venerable Anuruddha went to the Venerable Nandiya and the Venerable Kimbila and said, Come out, Venerable Sirs, come out. Our teacher, the Blessed One, has come. Then all three went to meet the Blessed One. One took his bowl and outer robe, one prepared a seat, and one set out water for washing the feet. The Blessed One sat down on the seat made ready and washed his feet. Then those three Venerable Ones paid homage to the Blessed One and sat down at one side. And the Blessed One said to them, I hope you are all keeping well, Anuruddha. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. We are keeping well, Blessed One, we are comfortable, and we are not having any trouble getting alms food. I hope, Anuruddha, that you are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. Surely, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. But, Anuruddha, how do you live thus? Venerable sir, as to that, I think thus. It is a gain for me, it is a great gain for me, that I am living with such companions in the holy life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards these venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do? Then I set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do. We are different in body, venerable sir, but one in mind. The Venerable Nandi and the Venerable Kimbila each spoke likewise, adding, that is how, venerable sir, we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. Good, good, Anuruddha. I hope that you all abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. Surely, venerable sir, we abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. But, Anuruddha, how do you abide thus? Venerable sir, as to that, whichever of us returns first from the village with alms food, prepares the seats, sets out the water for drinking and washing, and puts the refuse bucket in its place. Whichever of us returns last, eats any food left over, if he wishes. Otherwise, he throws it away, where there is no greenery, or drops it into water, where there is no life. He puts away the seats and the water for drinking and for washing. He puts away the refuse bucket after washing it, and he sweeps out the refectory. Whoever notices that the pots of water for drinking, washing, or the latrine are low or empty, takes care of them. If they are too heavy for him, he calls someone else by a signal of the hand, and they move it by joining hands. But because of this, we do not break out into speech. But every 5 days, we sit together all night, discussing the Dhamma. That is how we abide, diligent, ardent, and resolute. Good, good, Anuruddha. But while you abide thus diligent, ardent, and resolute, have you attained any superhuman states, a distinction in knowledge and vision, worthy of the noble ones, a comfortable abiding? Venerable sir, as we abide here diligent, ardent, and resolute, we perceive both light and a vision of forms. There's a footnote on that. I might read that for you. So the commentary explains light, obasa, as the preliminary light, which the sub-commentary glosses as the light produced by the access to jhana. It also adds that one who gains the fourth jhana develops the light kasina as a preliminary to arousing the divine eye. The vision of forms, dasanang rupanang, is the seeing of forms with the divine eye. Venerable Anuruddha was later declared by the Buddha to be the foremost disciple in the exercise of the divine eye. Soon afterwards, the light and the vision of forms disappear, but we have not discovered the cause for that. You should discover the cause for that, Anuruddha. Before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I too perceived both light and a vision of forms. Soon afterwards, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I thought, what is the cause and condition why the light and the vision of forms have disappeared? Then I considered thus. Doubt arose in me, and because of the doubt, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that doubt will not arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceived both light and a vision of forms. Soon afterward, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I thought, what is the cause and condition why the light and the vision of forms has disappeared? Then I considered thus. Inattention arose in me, and because of inattention, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, And so on, I considered thus. Sloth and torpor arose in me, and because of sloth and torpor, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus. Fear arose in me, and because of fear, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man set out on a journey and murderers leaped out on both sides of him. Then fear would arise in him because of that. So too, fear arose in me. The light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor, nor fear will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus, elation arose in me, and because of elation, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man seeking one entrance to a hidden treasure came all at once upon five entrances to a hidden treasure. Then elation would arise in him because of that. So too, elation arose in me. The light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor, nor fear, nor elation will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. So I considered thus, inertia arose in me, and because of inertia, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor, nor fear, nor elation will arise in me, nor inertia will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus. Excess of energy arose in me, and because of excess of energy, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man were to grip a quail tightly with both hands, it would die then and there. So too, an excess of energy arose in me. The light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor, nor fear, nor elation, nor inertia, nor excess of energy will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus. Deficiency of energy arose in me, and because of deficiency of energy, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man were to grip a quail loosely, it would fly out of his hands. So too, a deficiency of energy arose in me. The light and the vision of forms disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor sloth and torpor, nor fear, nor elation, nor inertia, nor excess of energy, nor deficiency of energy will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, I considered thus. Longing arose in me, and because of that longing, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor deficiency of energy, nor longing will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus, perception of diversity arose in me. And because of perception of diversity, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, so on, nor longing nor perception of diversity will arise in me again. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent. I considered thus, excessive meditation upon forms arose in me. And because of excessive meditation upon forms, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention through all the list, nor perception of diversity, nor excessive meditation upon forms will arise in me again. When Anuruddha, I understood that doubt is an imperfection of the mind, so the jittasa upakilesa, I abandoned doubt, an imperfection of the mind. When I understood that inattention was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned inattention. When I understood that sloth and torpor was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned sloth and torpor. When I understood that fear was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned fear, an imperfection of the mind. When I understood that elation was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned elation. When I understood that inertia was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned inertia. When I understood that excess of energy was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned excess of energy. When I understood that deficiency of energy was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned deficiency of energy. When I understood that longing was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned longing. When I understood that perception of diversity was an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned perception of diversity. When I understood that excessive meditation upon forms is an imperfection of the mind, I abandoned excessive meditation upon forms, an imperfection of the mind. As Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceived light, but I did not see forms. I saw forms, but I did not perceive light. Even for a whole night, or a whole day, or a whole day and night, I thought, what is the cause and condition for this? Then I considered thus, on the occasion when I do not attend to the sign of forms, but attend to the sign of light, I then perceive light, but do not see forms. On the occasion when I do not attend to the sign of light, but attend to the sign of forms, I then see forms, but do not perceive light, even for a whole night, or a whole day, or a whole day and night. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceived limited light and saw limited forms. I perceived immeasurable light and saw immeasurable forms, even for a whole night, or a whole day, or a whole day and night. I thought, what is the cause and condition for this? Then I considered thus, on the occasion when concentration is limited, my vision is limited, and with limited vision, I perceive limited light and limited forms. But on the occasion when concentration is immeasurable, my vision is immeasurable, and with immeasurable vision, I perceive immeasurable light and see immeasurable forms, even for a whole night or a whole day or a whole day and night. When, Anuruddha, I understood that doubt is an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned doubt, an imperfection of the mind, when I understood that inattention is an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned inattention, when I understood that sloth and torpor was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned sloth and torpor, when I understood that fear was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned fear, when I understood that elation was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned elation, when I understood that inertia was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned inertia, when I understood that excess of energy was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned inertia, when I understood That deficiency of energy was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned deficiency of energy. When I had understood that longing was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned longing. When I understood that perception of diversity was an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned perception of diversity. When I understood that excessive meditation upon forms is an imperfection of the mind and had abandoned excessive meditation upon forms, an imperfection of the mind, then I thought, I have abandoned those imperfections of the mind. Let me now develop concentration in three ways. Thereupon, Aniruddha, I develop concentration with applied thought and sustained thought. I develop concentration without applied thought, but with sustained thought only. I develop concentration without applied thought and without sustained thought. I develop concentration with rapture. I develop concentration without rapture. I develop concentration accompanied by enjoyment. I develop concentration accompanied by equanimity. When, Aniruddha, I had developed concentration with applied thought and sustained thought, when I had developed concentration accompanied by equanimity, the knowledge and vision arose in me. My deliverance is unshakable. This is my last birth. Now there is no renewal of being. That is what the Blessed One said. The Venerable Aniruddha was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Perception of diversity is just the, I'll look it up and see what it says here, but it's, as I understand it, it's the, just the mind that I'll read the footnote on it, the commentary, paraphrases. While I was attending to a single type of form, longing arose, thinking, I will attend to different kinds of forms. Sometimes I directed my attention towards the heavenly world, sometimes towards the human world. As I attended to different kinds of forms, perception of diversity arose in me. So I think it's just the, that's cosmological. If you go into the psychological realm, there's a lot of diversity that one can be attending to as well. So it's, I think it's just that. I don't think it's that strange or exalted. I think the just that once one starts paying attention to many things, then the mind starts branching off in many directions.
Ajahn, this is a completely different set of Kalesa than we're outlined in the Avatthikamma Sutta.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, is it reasonable to assume that these are like subsets of the hindrances? It seems like doubt is listed on its own swath and part for and the others are just subsets of farewell, sensual desire.
Yeah, they're subset. They're just sort of bit more fleshing out of examples and whatnot. And there's actually more than this in terms of lists of different kinds of upikilesas. That sutta before, I can't remember, there was seven or something, and this there must be about 10 or 12 or 14 or something. But there's a whole variety of different ways that the Buddha talked about it, but I think it's a bit more generic, okay, imperfections of mind, upakilesa, things which are obstructive, and they can be, I think the Buddha was probably more of a general or generic term that was then the detail was adapted to the actual person. Or situation, where, say, like for in this case of Aniruddha and these three monks all together were probably getting some pretty refined meditations going. So, the Buddha was giving fairly detailed exposition on these different aspects of what obstructs or what is an imperfection.
Well, in the beginning where it refers to perception of light and vision of forms, is the perception of light, is that like the nimitta and the vision of forms of the state of the rupa jhanas?
Well, the vision of forms, I think, it says here just seeing of divine eye, and that's how it's explained. The light can be, something that is perceived, both in terms of as a preliminary nimitta, as well as a nimitta that one establishes oneself on, as one's established in the concentration, or as things are settling, then forms will come up, imagery will come up. So that I think that I don't think it necessarily needs to be sort of explained as it's only the forms one sees with the divine eye in terms of a psychic power, but I would think also it would include any kind of the imagery that comes up in the mind that is even connected with other a bit more mundane. But that's certainly what happens in a meditation and pulls you away as well. It's either light comes up, and it can be either for settling the mind and the mind's really set, or it can be kind of dazzle the mind and get elated or excited about it. In the same way with vision of forms, it can be associated with pretty mundane things and then distract one from the meditation. Or it can be something that a vision of form comes up that is an nimitta or a sign of something that is quite peaceful, settling. You just have an image of the Buddha, or an image of the a peaceful sort of setting, and the mind really cools and settles. Or it can be some of the. Sometimes that's what happens when I'll give an example where Ajahn Chah going to see Ajahn Tonglat, and as he walked in, and as soon as he walked in and paid respects, and Ajahn Tonglat, he'd never seen him before, and he said, "Oh, Chah, it's about time you got here. So, I've been expecting you," the details aren't sort of pinned down, but that it wouldn't surprise me that Ajahn Tonglat was sitting meditation the day before that morning or something, and he had a nimitta come up in his mind. Okay, there's this monk, his name is Ajahn Chah, his name is Chah, and he's going to come and visit, and that happens fairly regular with some of these monks. That number 128. It's a great sutta. Okay, I think that's enough for today. Tamayani Tamagatara Yatatukaranga Kama.